Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here on this Friday. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. If you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, this should be your New Year's resolution. If you love the show, if you've listened to the show all year, you can become a subscriber to support the show for $5 a month. It's the only way that I'm able to do this show full time. You can do that at patreon.com/undivided or by becoming a contributor on my locals community, brandicruz.locals.com. Coming up on the show today, my friend Ari Hoffman is going to hop on for Fridays with Friends because he got his hands on some new documents via public disclosure request that show that officials from politicians to health officials in Washington state knew pretty early on that even vaccinated people were continuing to spread and get COVID-19, but they still moved forward with these really strict vaccine mandates up to and including firing state employees and government employees like police officers and firefighters. So Ari's going to join us to talk about what it is he uncovered. And some of it, you know, I think it goes to this. I'm not surprised by it. But it's another thing to actually see it and to kind of have proof that this is what was happening behind the scenes. Also, coming up on Florida Report with my sister Miranda, Governor Ron DeSantis is going after a Christmas drag show that he says explicitly marketed itself to children. We'll see if he's going to have any success in finding any sort of criminal wrongdoing, if that's really what he's looking for. Miranda will fill us in. But first, I want to talk a little bit about, so I've been railing on the podcast about this congressman-elect in New York, George Santos, and I've spent no less than probably 20 minutes of showtime in the past week saying that this guy is a pathological liar, a narcissist, and I don't believe that Republicans should seat him. I believe they should kick him out of his out of their caucus. I mean, George Santos lied about everything from he said his mom died on 9/11. He said he's Jewish. He's not. He said he worked at Goldman Sachs. He didn't. He says he graduated from college. He didn't. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And the more you dig into it, the more bizarre this guy's background is. And now there's some questions about some really odd campaign expenditures that people are digging into. And so I don't know if he's going to be criminally accountable for anything or if he's going to get kicked out of Congress. But I've made it very clear how I feel about this guy. And I've made it very clear that I don't care about the politics of it. I don't care if he's a Republican or a Democrat. I just care that he's a pathological liar. And people have said, well, Brandi, you know, if we got rid of all the liars in politics, there wouldn't be any left. And I do agree that as Americans, unfortunately, we have become accustomed to a certain level of gaslighting, of manipulation, of dishonesty amongst our elected officials. It's kind of sad that we've gotten there, but this is a different level. When you tell egregious lies, blatant lies about your background in the process of trying to get elected, I think that is a different level. And they're showing us who they are up front. So anyway, because I've ranted on that so much, I kind of want to revisit the situation in Washington state where we have a similar liar on our hands. And I hate to just call somebody a liar, but I don't know what else you say when it's that blatant. So we covered this back when it was going on in the lead up to the midterm election and after the midterm election. And I've mentioned it in passing as we've talked about George Santos. But, you know, as George Santos has so much attention and heat on him, I really don't want to let go of this situation with Democrat Clyde Shavers in Washington state. Democrats in Washington state appear to be more than happy to allow someone who lied about being an attorney, someone who exaggerated his military history, to allow them to join them in the state House of Representatives. And I mean, obviously there's some hypocrisy there, but I think that, and what I really don't understand about why Democrats won't take the moral high ground here is they have nothing to lose. They really have nothing to lose by coming out publicly calling for his resignation, removing him from his committee assignments if he doesn't resign, etc. And here's why I say they have nothing to lose. If they get Clyde Shavers to resign from the seat in the 10th Legislative District, which he took from a Republican in the latest election, they get to handpick a Democrat to take his seat to fill in until the next election. So it's not as if they have to give the seat up or redo an election. they get to handpick a Democrat that doesn't have that level of baggage. And they also avoid, I mean, if Clyde Chavers keeps his seat and then he wants to run again in 2024, what a messy situation that is for Democrats. And he's, you know, then I don't know how he wins re-election, because now he's going to have to live, he's going to have to be who he really is. But more than that, he's going to have to continuously answer for all of his lies. And so Democrats stop that kind of messiness 2 years from now. If they put in a different person really early, that person, maybe they do a good job, and then they can run for re-election to that seat. And I find it really unfortunate that we haven't really heard notable Democrats in Olympia, the governor, the attorney general, the lieutenant governor, the speaker of the House, come out and really forcefully rebuke what Clyde Chavers did and try to take some sort of disciplinary action against him. You know, I heard, I think it was the Senate majority leader who was asked in a story, you know, what he thought Clyde Chavers should do or if there's going to be any action. And he basically said that he hopes he's learned his lesson. And my response to that would be, what lesson has he learned? The only lesson he's learned is that you can lie and still get elected to office. He hasn't learned a lesson. There have been no consequences besides a little public shaming to Clyde Chavers' lies. All he learned is, I think, a reinforcement of that behavior. If I lie, it can get me somewhere. So if you want him to learn his lesson, you make sure that he doesn't serve the people of the 10th Legislative District. A district, by the way, that has a heavy Navy population. Here's a guy who, yes, served in the Navy, but then felt the need to embellish his record. And that's just offensive for the people in that community who were lied to, didn't find out until ballots were already in hand. A lot of people had already turned their ballots in. Clyde Chavers didn't win by a whole lot. So I just feel the need to try to keep pushing for this ahead of the 2023 legislative session. You know, I believe 100% Republican George Santos, he's got to go. The guy is certifiable. But I also think, as long as we're on the subject of liars winning elections in November, that Democrats in Washington State should take the moral high ground on this issue. And hey, next time, because there will be a next time that there's some Republican in Washington State who wins office based on material falsehoods, then you can say, hey, remember what we did with Clyde Chavers? I just want to see there be some level of moral consistency. I'd like to see them do it for the right reasons. But even if they won't do it for the right reasons, they should do it for the simple fact that they get to handpick someone without baggage. They get to get this guy with baggage out of there, and then they'll probably have an easier time keeping the seat in 2024. I want to dive into Fridays with Friends a little early today, because it's a pretty juicy and meaty one. Okay, that came out. It sounded grosser than I intended it to. It's a good one today, is what I meant to say. Our friend Ari Hoffman over at KVI also writes for the Post-Millennial. He got his hands on some documents that were obtained via public disclosure that shed light on some of the decision-making that was happening behind the scenes in Washington State as the vaccine rollout was happening and as the state and health officials were deciding, is it prudent to do a vaccine mandate for state workers, for government workers? And I will be honest, I mean, I think that those of us who've really questioned a lot of what the government did during the pandemic, I don't know that this information is particularly surprising, but it's important to, you know, see it in black and white and to hear it for ourselves. And the truth is that as officials in Washington State were touting the vaccine as this thing that we needed to get in order to end the pandemic, they were realizing pretty early on behind the scenes that folks who were vaccinated were still being infected at a high rate and were still able to reinfect other people. So I invited Ari Hoffman on to talk about what he found. Ari, welcome back to Fridays with Friends. Happy almost New Year. What's your resolution?
My resolution, should I say going to the gym to lose the COVID-45 or whatever it was that I gained during this whole mess? Or is that cliche to say that?
No, you know, that's not. And in fact, I'm starting a sponsorship on Monday because I started this weight loss program in November. Mm-hmm. And it went so well, I'm going to have him be a sponsor of my podcast because I've lost 25 pounds in like a month and a half. And I only have 15 left to go. And then my COVID-40, which was a genuine COVID-40, will be gone. So I started my lose weight commitment before New Year's.
So I was doing the bounce house business, you know, all that delivery stuff before I got into radio and stuff. And I was in great shape. I mean, I was down to my high school weight before COVID. And then it's, hey, go sit on the couch. So, yeah, kind of ballooned up. And then my son says to me the other day, he goes, Dad, I'd really like for you to see your grandchildren one day. He's 15. So I'm like, okay, we'll go back to the gym then. The problem is going to the gym. Then you want to eat everything in sight afterwards.
Oh, your son's acting like you're some obese slob. You're fine.
Yeah, thank you.
But yeah, the COVID weight was a real struggle. Anyway, way off course. I want to talk about some really interesting documents you got back via public disclosure in a moment that have to do with vaccines. But first, you actually messaged me this. It was like you were acknowledging that something had gone on. So George Santos, we just got done actually talking about him on the show, you know, the liar from New York's third. He's been like a regular guest on your show before you knew he was a pathological liar. Why?
So let's go back in time.
Okay.
I'm from New York, and the district that he is now going to be representing, in theory, assuming nothing changes, is where a lot of my friends and family live. Hmm. So I said, hey, let me allow them to listen to the show. And I said, let me interview this guy, because a lot of them were talking about how great he was and how he was a breath of fresh air and all that. So I had him on the show. And in the first interview with him, I went back and listened to it. He volunteered. I didn't even know this. He volunteered the gay thing. He volunteered the Jewish thing. And I'm like, oh, Jewish. Okay. You know, I'm the Jewish radio host. Let's have some more conversations with this guy. And he was so charming and so personable that I'm like, hey, anytime we're going to talk about the red wave, which never happened or anything like that, let's have George on. So about once a month for the last year, we had George Santos on my show all the time. And I've had to eat a lot of crow this week. Now, for me, my first red flag about him, when you don't meet people in person, you don't really get that same, I can pick up on what a person is. You're doing it through the phone. We never did it via Zoom or anything like that. So you can't pick up on body language. Mm. But I went to the Republican Jewish Coalition, as they call it, the kosher cattle call for all the people who might be running for president. And I went to this thing in Las Vegas, and he was there, and he was celebrated. And everybody was so excited about this guy that he got elected, and he was very charming, very personal. People I've known my entire life who I didn't know went to this thing I ran into, and they're like, you got to meet him. I'm like, oh, it's so funny. I've met him 1,000 times. And then there's this thing us Jews do called Jewish geography. Whenever you see somebody, you find out the person's Jewish. Oh, you're from there. Do you know Bob? Do you know Jane? Do you know whatever? And then where's your family from? Where's your this? Where's your that? So we get talking. He wanted a gin and tonic, if I recall correctly, and I was having some red wine. Just FYI, just setting the scene for everybody. Okay. This was at a cocktail party at the event. And I said, started talking to him about the Jewish thing. I take it back. The woman who was with me, who is a longtime family friend of mine, she starts doing this with him. And he goes, well, I'm Jew-ish. And all of a sudden, we both went like, wait, what? They just had you on stage about all this. And he goes, well, it's my family background, my family this. And all of a sudden, I start getting the something's not quite right here. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if it's just that or something else. And then this article comes out in the New York Times. And I'm like, wait, there may be a whole lot more to this. And the more we find out, it just kind of feels like a sense of betrayal. We're all so lied to. And I'm getting a little mad at the Republican argument I see coming out more and more of, well, the Democrats do it too. No.
So bad.
The argument should be none of them should be doing this. And either we have one standard for everybody or we have no standards at all. And the other thing I think is getting ignored a lot in this, have we created a culture in Washington, D.C., in this country, where everybody feels they need to check whatever box it is in order to get elected or in order to get approval? I don't think I need to name names, but when I was running for the Seattle City Council, I was very obviously a Jewish candidate. And there's another person who's currently sitting on the council who, while I was in the race, started identifying as Jewish. I don't know what their family history is or anything like that, but, well, whatever. Make your own judgments from way I'm inflecting on that. But they haven't mentioned it since. Huh. I haven't heard anything about it since. And it's really just sickening to me, not the Jewish thing, but that people say, I need to check this box. I need to check this box. And I need to say I went here. The guy lied about Baruch College. I went to Baruch College for summer school. That's like lying about Bellevue Community College. That's like saying, oh, look what I did. I went to Bellevue College. I don't want to, be mean to anybody who went to Bellevue College, but Baruch is part of the City of University school system, City of New York University school system. It's not like bragging like you got into Harvard or something. So the whole thing is ridiculous.
Things on that. And I don't know that you have to eat crow. I mean, it's not like you knew the guy was a liar. And the national media didn't even find out he was a liar until it was too late. But what do you think Republicans, I guess, should do if it were up to you in Congress? They have some options before them. What do you think they should do, and what do you think they will do?
I think they missed an opportunity already because I think I heard earlier today that he announced he's only going to serve one term. I
Yeah.
have to go back and double. I think I heard that in a news thing when I
He
was
did.
doing John's show this morning. And the problem is the Republicans should have said, we're going to do exactly to him what we did to Stephen King. Steve King. We're Representative Steve King. When he made all those anti-Semitic comments, we are going to primary him. We're going to be done with him. We are stuck with him for now. We're going to ask him to resign. He's not going to resign. We're stuck with him for now. They should have gone ahead of this. Instead, they bury their heads in the sand. And said, well, we have the majority and we don't want to sacrifice that. That was monumentally stupid. At the same time, they could have said, and we're calling on the Democrats to do this to AOC, who said she was Jewish, and Elizabeth Warren, who said she was Native American, and everybody else, and they would have controlled the narrative. The mainstream media wouldn't have carried their narrative, but at least they could have held their heads high. And instead, they're doing this instead. It's crushing because they're blowing it.
Yeah, you make such a good point because obviously, even if in some weird world George Santos would feel empowered to run in 2024, obviously it wouldn't go well. So there really would be no downside to them having said early on, like, we want him to resign, he's not going to do it. And then we're going to try to take him out in 2024. Like, we don't want him back in this seat. Yeah, that's interesting. And on the Jew-ish thing, so he obviously acknowledged you guys in the moment. Was that the same event, by the way, where he called Benjamin Netanyahu David Netanyahu?
I think it may have been. I'll tell you is that I had a hard time at this event. You're going to laugh about this. So a lot of the event was on the Jewish Sabbath, and you would think that the Republican Jewish Coalition would be a little bit more sensitive to that. But anytime they use a microphone or anything, I can't use electricity on the Sabbath. So I'm zipping out of the room. So half of the speeches, I'm there for all the speeches. I didn't hear most of them. I had to go watch the highlights in my hotel room that night. So yeah, I had heard he had done that, and I thought it was weird, but maybe slip of the tongue, maybe too many gin and tonics with Ari Hoffman. Who knows what the case may be? But for me, here's something else I don't get. Brandy, you're an investigative journalist. You do opinion now, but you always hunted down the truth. The first story you and I worked on together was Uba Gardir, bus bombing lady. Remember her? And I remember I didn't like her politics. So what I do, I Googled her and I found out about this bus bombing thing. And then I went and got the video, and it was as easy as that. Where was the opposition research from the Democrats? None of it whatsoever. This would have been easy to track down. Now you got his opponent Zimmerman out there saying, we had it all. I didn't hear anything about this from anybody. The left-wing media would have carried this in a second if they had actually given it to him. But no, nothing. So there's culpability on every single side for something like
Yeah,
this.
very, very obvious things and easy to find out. And can you just quickly give people an explainer of Gardeer just in case they're not familiar with that story?
Sure. So Uba Gardir ran for King County Council last year, sorry, 2 years ago. And when she ran for King County Council, what people didn't know about her was that in her background in 2010, I believe it was, she decided to step onto a bus filled with middle schoolers and threatened to blow it up.
Yeah.
And she didn't have a bomb on her at the time. It was obviously some kind of mental health breakdown, but there was video of it. And to run for office when this video is out there, and for a whole chunk of the Democrat politicians in Washington to support and endorse this candidate, even though the video was out there, was mind-boggling to me. So if we talk about holding people accountable to their past mistakes, to anything, did nobody want to talk about this? That's a person who never could have gotten elected.
Yeah, and I'll note, and I think we've talked about this on your show, but I've never mentioned it on here, and I've talked about a lot of my frustrations in leaving Fox 13. When that story came out and you had it, you posted on the Post Millennial. And I don't know if I reached out to you or if you had sent it to me, and I'm like, oh my gosh, we have to do this story on Fox 13. I mean, to me, it was like, obviously we'd do a story about a candidate who threatened to blow up a bus full of kids. Why would we not? And you were nice enough to send me the surveillance footage that you had received. And then I went and did my own due diligence, got the court documents just so I had them. Not that I didn't trust that they were real from you, but that's just part of doing your due diligence. And I remember bringing them to my, pitching the story on the morning, for the morning show. And the producer is saying, well, we have to say that it came from the post-millennial. We have to word it as a conservative news source, the post-millennial. And I remember we had a blow up over it because I'm like, I won't do the story then. I said, We have all the facts and information about that story. It's all verified. There is no reason why we need to specify conservative news source, the post-millennial. And it's just one of those things that people don't realize that was happening behind the scenes. And I eventually won out and we didn't have to put conservative in the verbiage. But I think you and I have talked about this before. But I want to move on to this PDR thing quick. But I've talked earlier on the show about Clyde Shavers and how now that there's this renewed attention towards George Santos and pathological liars, you know, I'm thinking, well, surely Democrats will want to take another look at Clyde Shavers in Washington State. Do you think anything happens to the guy?
Well, I don't know if you noticed this. I saw this last night. I was looking at something else on his website. I think you and I have been some of the ones posting most about him.
Yeah.
And I went over on his website and I clicked the social media links to go see if there was anything back there. They're all gone.
Yep.
They're all gone. And for people who would say, oh, well, the campaign's over, BS, complete BS, because I know candidates that haven't run in years and their campaign things are still active. They're not that efficient when it comes to it. I think I've got 8 or 9 Twitter accounts that I haven't touched in years from companies I used to own or who knows what. There's no way. For sure, there had to be something there. They had to go scrub it. They wanted it gone, or they wanted all the things like the people like us or our listeners calling him out for all his lies. Where are the Democrats calling this guy out? I don't hear it at all. He has stolen valor. He lied about where he served in the military. He lied about serving on submarines when he was stuck in an office doing media work or something like that. He lied about his job. He lied about everything. Either we have one standard for everybody or we have no standards. It seems more and more we have no standards. I'm calling it the Santos effect, the snowballing thing.
Yeah.
Where now everybody's looking for accountability in the politicians. First of all, would have been nice to have this years ago before guys like Madison Cawthorn came around.
Right.
And I'm saying that as a Republican. You know, that's a guy I never had any respect for whatsoever. But why does it take something like this? Why do we all assume that all politicians are lying you-know-whats? We should have forever held them to a higher standard, and we're just not. Instead, we're electing social media influencers.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think candidate quality is already very, very low. I'm not saying all candidates, but many, many candidates, especially this last cycle, shouldn't have even been on the ticket. And are we really going to let it get so low where the extent of the lies of someone like George Santos and Clyde Shavers isn't enough to automatically disqualify them in the eyes of any person, regardless of whether they have a matching ideology? It's pretty sad, the state of things. Let's move on to this PDR. So you're one of the few people who has not let go of this COVID era vaccine mandate, firings and stuff, and I'm really trying still to understand and get to the bottom of it. So what exactly did you file a PDR for?
So I didn't file part of this PDR.
Okay.
Part of this PDR came from a listener from my show who filed part of it.
Okay.
That's looking to figure out who knew what when. Now, what happened was they sent over to me pieces of this. And I have, Brandy, I'm still getting PDRs from 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm still getting this stuff constantly. I'm sure you have some stuff out there that you still get notifications from time to time. And I get it. And sometimes when I'm doing the show and doing all this other stuff, I don't get a chance to go through it as much as I want to. But I had this stuff sitting there that had gaps in it. When did King County Health know that the vaccine wasn't effective? And then this listener had these documents. And this listener sent them over to me. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. This connects to this. This fills in the gap here. This fills in the gap there. And since now I got all the time in the world because of Christmas break, because I don't celebrate Christmas, right? I got all the time in the world. I sat down, actually went through all of it. I'm like, holy cow, they knew beforehand. And then I confirmed it with a few sources of mine, because you got to track this stuff down. I can't just assume these are legit documents that came from somebody. I had to verify the PDR, had to verify all the stuff. And it was legitimate. And I checked down with a few sources. Apparently the governor's office was getting regular updates on all this from all the health agencies, as was Washington State Health Department. They were getting all these updates. So what you're seeing in this is not just people talking in office chatter. They were seeing all of this, and still the governor was out there calling everybody bioreactor, super spreader, Trump supporter, whatever it was that he was saying.
You're making a risk for everybody around you when you don't get vaccinated. You're a risk for your spouse, you're a risk for your kids, your grandkids, your parents, your coworkers, because you are a bioreactor facility generating virus and spreading it around, including to kids who can't get vaccinated. I want to reiterate that. If you're a 50-year-old man who, you know, voted for Donald Trump and didn't think COVID was a problem and you don't get vaccinated right now, you arrest every kid in your city because you could be spreading a virus to a 10-year-old who can't get eligible for the vaccine right now. Now, some of us think that's not responsible. And if that's judgmental, so be it.
And what's mind-boggling to me is they were talking about the vaccine efficacy a month before the vaccine mandates, a month before. They were saying there are serious problems here. And at that time, it was already a 20% breakthrough case. But the narrative, I went back and checked it in news sources, it was still, oh, they're very select breakthrough cases. They're very, very small. But then what bothered me more was instead of them saying, hey, you're not fully protected, we may want to tell people that, it was, we have to reframe the conversation. And we have to tell them, oh, it's preventing serious death, illness, whatever it is, as opposed to saying, let's be honest for a change.
Yeah.
And they couldn't even do that. And by the way, they had a perfect opportunity. They could have said, Donald Trump's vaccine is not working. They could have done that. And by the way, all the people on the left would have gone bonkers about it. They could have stolen that argument away from the right. And they missed an opportunity to do that and hit Donald Trump at the same time. But they didn't do it.
Yeah. And you pointed out, I think, two really key moments in the timeline. And so essentially what you're seeing in these documents is emails, there's public health officials, and they're saying, hey, we're starting to get an awful lot of these breakthrough cases. In fact, I think one of them was reports of a bunch of cases that originated at a party that was a party to celebrate that 100% of the people at that party were vaccinated, right? And the health department knew about this. But you mentioned two things that the governor did, which I think say a lot about his honesty and his character. So, you know, they were aware that there were quite a few breakthrough cases happening amongst the vaccinated. As you point out, he gets up still and he gives his infamous, you know, Trump supporters are bioreactor facilities. If they're not vaccinated, they're killing children in their communities. And then on my show at Fox 13 at the time, The Divide, the governor was going around the state having his, oh, Washington is reopen, and said, even knowing that, hey, these vaccines aren't going to be what we thought they were going to be. He's out there saying that we won the Super Bowl of COVID.
I'm not sure you want to go back and reform when you won the Super Bowl. And we've won the Super Bowl of this, of the COVID pandemic.
So I guess what should people make of that? Even if you were 100% in, like, the pandemic is deadly dangerous, like I want to follow all the rules and wear my mask. I guess what should people make of the fact that had they come out and said early on, hey, you can still absolutely get and spread it, even if you're vaccinated, wouldn't that have helped to save lives? Because people could have done other things?
Well, absolutely, because you mentioned the party that I cited in the research. Mm-hmm. There was this party, we don't have to name the organization, I don't want to burn them, they're not a government agency, but it was like a Burning Man type event. Hundreds of people were there, and it was this massive super spreader event. Then they discussed that Seattle Cancer Care Alliance and the Fred Hutchinson Center, cancer research, that these guys were seeing breakthrough cases. And we know, even if you think COVID is complete BS, you know that it affects the elderly and people with pre-existing conditions, and especially people with a low white blood cell count because of chemo or anything else. That, who knows what happened when you find out, and in this email was talking about the staff at these places getting COVID, spreading COVID. So you should have at least warned them, but no, they didn't even do that. So did they care about protecting lives? Did they care about control? Did they care about control over us? Because it seems like they were just favoring themselves on the control, because if they seriously cared about protecting lives, they would have told the people at these different health centers, hey, we're seeing this over at Seattle Cancer Care. We're seeing this at Fred Hutchinson Center. You may want to do something about it, but that's not what they did. They kept to themselves. And the worst part about that email thread is the subject line, which says, do not distribute. They were covering it up. They were hiding it. They had all this bad information. I thought it's about transparency. I thought it's about following the science and data. And they buried all of it.
Were there any individuals on the health side and on the political side in those emails? So, because I think of the Twitter files, for instance, and one of the things I think has been underreported by conservative media is that there were some employees at Twitter who were like, hey, we don't have a basis to delete these accounts. We don't, or to, you know, we don't have anything in our rules that say that this is against the rules or whatever. So internally at Twitter, there were people pushing back against some of the actions that they were carrying out. Did you see anything similar in this case, like where there was like employees who were like, shouldn't we like let people know about this?
Your audience isn't going to believe me on this next one.
Oh,
the
no.
one who was most forceful about this was Seattle Mayor, former Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin.
Stop.
Jenny Durkin. Yeah. Jenny Durkin had an email in that thread because all these emails were in response to a question from her of, hey, guys, we're seeing all this. Are you seeing the same thing? And the discussion was based around how to respond to her. That was how to do the messaging to her.
Wow.
And there's no love lost between me and Jenny Durkin. Just Google me and her and you'll catch the time she came out against me in the Seattle Times and stuff. But this was her asking, hey, wait, something's not working right here. That's number one. There was also a guy at Snohomish County Health who was saying, sorry for the bad news. As if we got to tell people. He wasn't the one necessarily talking about changing the messaging. He was talking about it a little bit in terms of, hey, we need to emphasize other treatments. We need to emphasize all that. He's actually doing the right thing. But nobody seemed interested in doing that. They were still demonizing anybody who said ivermectin. They were still demonizing anybody for that. And now Jay Inslee gets COVID, what, a couple months after this? And he's like, and thank God I got vaccinated and I'm taking Paxlovid and all these other drugs. Really? Why do you need to do that? They knew. They knew all of this.
But on the Mayor Durkin front, and she and I have a perfectly cordial relationship. We still chat every once in a while. I'm going to have her on the show here after the new year. I mean, she's saying that behind the scenes, but she still was very set on and did ultimately carry out the firing of unvaccinated police officers after that, yes. I would assume.
Yes, she did that. And she's the one who put in place a vaccine mandate following Jay Inslee's. So for whatever we saw in email, whatever her motivation was, it was, I don't know if it's pure or not, but she was the one who asked the question of, hey, we're seeing the breakthrough cases. Was she looking for alternative messaging? Was she looking for the people who follow the science and data to give her a different thing to say to people? Maybe. But it was her question that got that whole thing started. That thread would not exist if not for that question from Jenny Durkin.
It's interesting stuff. Ari Hoffman, where can people listen / read your work?
Absolutely. They can read everything I write over at the Post Millennial. They can follow me on Twitter at The Hoffather, and they can listen to me every single day from 3 to 6 p.m. right here on Talk Radio 570 KBI.
Fabulous. Well, thanks for coming on and joining us again on Fridays with Friends.
Pleasure as always, Brandy. You're doing a great job and Happy New Year.
It's Friday. That means it's time to check in with my sister, Miranda, in Florida on our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello. Happy New Year almost to you.
Happy New Year almost.
You guys also have an upcoming legislative session down in Florida. We've been talking about ours in Washington State and some of the bills that have been introduced, some of the bills that haven't, that perhaps should. You have an interesting one that's going to be introduced for a second year in a row, didn't pass last year, that I think is like a no-brainer, and that's teaching kids about social media safety in school.
Yeah, so Senator Danny Burgess, a Republican senator out of Florida, he proposed this bill earlier this year, as you said, and it actually got bipartisan support. So I'm not really sure what killed the bill. It sounds like maybe it was just some wording things and having to lock down some definitions of what social media really is. But basically, I think this is kind of a no-brainer too. The bill basically just proposes that schools will now teach some sort of social media safety and also just like education about social media, how to use it, how to identify, scams and people that might be targeting you for, you know, not friendly reasons. And in addition to that, like teaching kids, it's also aiming to offer some support to parents. So parents can kind of like fight the good fight with their kids and know what they're learning and how to enforce it.
Yeah, because if you're teaching kids what to look out for, it doesn't hurt to share that information with parents. And like, yeah, total no-brainer, both sides. I don't see this not passing this year if they've got all the little kinks figured out of it. Yeah, I mean, schools, for so long, and I know we've complained about, like, schools not teaching financial literacy and stuff that's like, I mean, fine, teach math and stuff, but also give the kids some life skills. And social media is a life skill that you just have to have these days.
Absolutely. And I definitely feel there's a lot of like life skills that should be retaught in schools or taught a little bit more, especially when you're like exiting the program of K through 12, you know, as a senior, you're kind of just put out there into the wind in most cases. And unless your parents were super financially literate or super like, you know, taught you a lot of like, you know, warning signs about strangers and the internet, you're kind of like left to fend for yourself. So it would have been nice to have a little more guidance leaving schools. So hopefully this sticks and lets these kids kind of have a little more education about something that's literally in their face all day long, social media.
Yeah, and I mean, when we were kids, we had the internet, but all we had was like AOL chat room, and it was so much less. These days, I think one of the problems also is that parents don't even know half of what is going on the internet. There's so much more and so many different platforms and weird things that parents probably are like, how do I keep my kids safe when I don't even know what's fully out there? And so that's probably challenging as well. All right. There were some Christmas time drag shows in South Florida, and Ron DeSantis says that he's going to investigate them for what?
Yeah, this isn't the first time DeSantis and his team have gone after the drag community here in Florida. They claim that they target their shows to kids. Now, the show that we're talking about this time is a national traveling show, and it made an appearance in Broward County and in Miami over this past week, Monday and Tuesday. And a spokesperson for one of the venues in Broward said that the show was advertised for 18 and older, but if you had kids, your parents had to be with you. So I'm not sure where they're getting the idea that these shows were being targeted towards children, but he definitely doesn't really like to let that slide. So it'll be interesting to see if anything actually comes of it, because I don't think much came of it the last time he went after a drag show here in Miami for the same thing, which was a brunch. It's like a brunch restaurant with entertainment, and people bring their kids sometimes.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm of two minds on the drag show thing. Like, drag show with adults, whatever. Like, that doesn't bother me. And also, if parents choose to bring their kids to a drag show, like, who am I to tell parents what to do with their children? That's not really ever been my thought process. However, some of these drag shows, when I see videos of people's genitals popping out of whatever thing they got it in, or their legs spreading in front of kids, it's like, would you bring your child to a strip club? No, everybody would universally frown upon that. But for some reason, when it's a drag queen that ends up inadvertently exposing themselves, it's like much different. So if there was like something inappropriate happening with kids there, totally, I want him to get to the bottom of it. But I don't know if there's been any outright indication of that so far.
No, and I've been to a very wide array of different types of drag shows, and you're usually pretty aware about what level of like performance you're going to get when you're going. And you know, performers of all types have been dressing, cross-dressing for ages and ages. So some of these shows can actually be extremely entertaining and extremely family friendly, but whether these ones were or not, I guess it stands to be determined. So we'll see what happens there.
We'll get to the bottom of it. All right. I have spent some New Year's in Miami, which is always nice. Apparently, though, police in Fort Myers, Florida, are very worried about how some folks might celebrate the coming of 2023.
Yeah, this isn't a unique situation to Fort Myers. This particular article I found was directed towards Fort Myers people. But basically, the police are asking you not to celebrate the new year by unloading your gun into the air. And I can't believe it has to be said, but every single year, people do this. You can hear it. You watch the news. Sometimes people get very like closely, like they come through the roof, like what goes up must come down, you know? So it's just not a way to celebrate the New Year's. It's not safe. And it, you know, firing a gun in certain areas is only like a misdemeanor, but if you're within like 1,000 feet of a person or where people live, it turns into a felony really quick. So It's not a great way to ring in the new year. Just let the fireworks happen and pretend that those are the ones.
I tend to think, though, anyone who's stupid enough to do that probably is not going to heed the advice not to do it.
It's true. You know, I can't imagine somebody being like, oh, you know what? I saw that news article where they told me it's unsafe, so I may not do that. But really, I just hope that maybe there's some people in the crowd that are like, put it away, put it away.
Put the gun away, little Jimmy.
Or little Susie or whoever decides to party too hard this weekend. So no, just fireworks. Let the professionals handle the show and just enjoy yourself and be safe.
All right. Well, you enjoy yourself and be safe, and we will see you again in the new year.
I look forward to it. Happy New Year.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
And that's it for our Friday edition of Undivided. Thanks for being here. Thank you for your continuing commitment to give common sense a comeback. And Happy New Year to all of you. Celebrate responsibly. Don't fire your guns into the air in case that's something that you were going to do. I'm really excited for 2023. You know, 2022 was so fun for me. My first full year doing this show full time, independently. I mean, it's been awesome. And obviously a lot of that is because you guys support the show or I wouldn't be able to do it. And I'm really excited about what's to come in 2023. You know, not only for the show and how we're going to grow, but personally, you know, I'm getting married in 2023. It's just going to be an exciting year. And I hope you all have exciting plans for the new year as well. So I guess this is the part where I'm really corny and I say, I'll see you next year.